This is Hotshot Archery's Outdoor Podcast.
The show starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Hotshot Archery's Outdoor Podcast. Logan Chartrand holding down the fort at home. I've got Robin on the phone, who is on his way to southern Missouri. And this week, we are really talking about what's driving your road trip this week, Robin.
Well, headed down south to southeast Missouri for two reasons. One, hoping the blackberries are ripe now. They were just about there the last time I was down. And number two, hoping to put another arrow into another wild hog.
Yeah, so you've been pretty active. It seems like things have really kicked off for you hog hunting over these last 3 weeks. I guess it's been, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago was the first night that I went with you, and I think you maybe had gone out one time prior to that, if I'm not mistaken, but I most certainly could be.
No, that's about right. It's been about 6 weeks since I really got my feeders going, and it took about 2 weeks for the hogs to really start hitting them. And then about a week after that is when you and I went. And as you know, the hogs were a no-show that night, which seemed a little odd to both of us, given the pictures I had been getting previously. But I've actually went a couple nights ago and figured out what the issue was there. I went to the same feeder that you and I hunted, and went in what I thought was plenty early, and the hogs were already at the feeder. Like, we could see them, you know. And when I say we, it's me and Keith. And they were there before the feeder even went off. Feeder set for 8 o'clock, and it was 7:15, and they're already piled all around that feeder. So, long story short, I pulled the card from that camera and figured out that those hogs are hitting that feeder right about 7:20, 7:30 every single night, even though the feeder doesn't go off till 8. So I think those, we were just in there probably right after the hogs when you and I went.
Let's say, because when we went, you had pictures. I mean, these, you couldn't probably pattern animals more easily than these pigs, but all of a sudden we headed down there. It was a cool evening, so we had this cool front pushing through. There were some storms that had rolled through earlier that afternoon, and I mean, there was nothing. There was no corn on the ground, so you knew the hogs had been in since sometime in the last 24 hours, but pulled the card on the camera, and one of those situations where it's like, okay, this will tell us all we need to know, except for, oops, something happened. We didn't have pictures over the last week or the last several days, so we really didn't have any clue what was going on. But you're thinking these hogs are waiting until the next day to come hit the feeder to pick up that corn from the night before?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but that is what they're doing. They're not even coming back after dark. Occasionally, they're there in the morning, but for whatever reason, they're coming in there before it goes off and cleaning up what is there and then going wherever it is they're going for the rest of the afternoon and evening and night. It's weird, but now that I know that, those hogs are in trouble, I can tell you that.
Oh, absolutely. Just have to get down there a little quicker. And I know when we were heading in, you had even mentioned, man, I pushed the timer back a little bit on the feeder because I don't want to have to be in a mad rush to get down here. And we've talked several times, it's not a short trip to get to some of these properties. And they're still, it's like they may just have gotten set on such a pattern that that's when they come. They're not really, maybe they don't have a lot of feeding going on down there where they have associated the feeder going off with here's the food, or maybe that's just when they're cruising through. But that's crazy. So what's the plan going forward? How do you make sure that you are down there in time? I mean, what's even with the way the feeders are set up, you mentioned that you're going to try to refill them. Are you thinking of adjusting the time? It just seems like that's pretty unnatural compared to the properties you had been hunting over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it is. It's odd. And rather than fight it, I just moved that feeder time back up to 7:30. And so what that means is no matter how hot it is, I'm just going to have to get in that feeder and roast like it's a sauna, you know, about 6 o'clock in order to be there waiting on them whenever they come through. And that's okay, because I'd rather shoot them in the daylight than have to shoot them in the dark, you know, with a light.
Oh, yeah, it makes tracking way easier. And if you know that they're going to be there in the light, I mean, why not? It makes it a little easier to get in there at 6 o'clock and be set up and waiting, knowing that you've got an hour, hour and a half, versus I'm going to get in here at 6 o'clock and they may not be coming through till 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, exactly. The feeder that I'm going to fill this evening before we hunt and while we're picking blackberries is on a different property. And it's one that they've been hitting really regularly. In fact, they've been hitting it at 1 o'clock every afternoon and then right before dark again. But I also know that it's empty. It ran out of corn a couple of days ago. So I'm going to get it full and keep those hogs coming regularly so I could jump on them, you know, later this week and into next. So, plenty of hogs to get killed here in the next few weeks.
Let's say you just put a nice one down the other day. We had the picture up on social media. That was a pretty good size hog. And I know there are several that were even bigger than that one that you've seen in the area. So hopefully be able to get them back on their patterns and get those feeders filled back up. I got to ask, do you have the bow along tonight? If you're heading out picking blackberries, another chance at maybe another spot and stalk. And that's something I think we should cover too, is that hog that we posted the pictures of was spot and stalk. It wasn't setting in the blind over the feeder.
Yeah, that was the same night that I just described Keith and I being out there and the hogs beating us to the feeder. And we did go ahead and sneak up on that group of hogs. And I got within 5 or 6 yards of a nice boar, but it was too thick to shoot at him and he ended up leaving. So we actually hightailed it away from there and as fast as we could get to the other side of that property where I have another feeder. The plan was to go get in that ground blind, and those hogs were up and in and around that feeder also before we got there. We could hear them before we were even 100 yards from the feeder, because there's a few mud holes there that they always hit before they go to the feeder. That's how that all worked out. Essentially, there was just hogs in and out of those wallows and going back and forth to the feeder waiting for it to go off, and we were able to sneak in and get a shot off of one. And like you said, and obviously by the pictures, it was a really nice boar. It's not the biggest one we've killed here in Missouri, but it's one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked a lot about just the hog situation. Any hog that you can take out of there is a good one. It really doesn't matter the size, but it's always nice when you can slip in on a mature one who has been wild for quite some time and make sure to get in and get within bow range. And I mean, hogs are, especially as they get larger also, we've talked about how they're not the easiest to put down sometimes. So being able to get within that range and be able to get a good shot on a hog that's moving around, shifting, not necessarily just sitting stationary somewhere, is pretty impressive. And then you did it with a brand new sight. You're trying out the single pin sight from HHA, the Tetra Max. How did that feel for you?
It's actually been a really easy and natural switch over for me. This is the first single pin I've ever shot, as you know, and it just felt really good. I used the body of the pin, that vertical plane, to just line up with the hog's front leg, and it was real nice, easy, and just natural aiming point. I think I'm really gonna like it. Also, we've talked about my main reason for wanting to switch to that single pin was to use that vertical pin on a turkey neck. So it'll be fun when spring rolls around to use it on them too.
Absolutely. It's a nice reference point, and there's something to be said, even as I'm sitting here and I've got that four pin version sitting on my desk. There's something about that single pin sight picture where you just see that dot and that black line. It's like, wow, holy cow, there's so much that I can see going on here.
Yeah, it's like I said, it is obviously different, but I like it. Like, and it hasn't been unnatural or hard to get used to at all.
Awesome. Were you able to leave it pretty much? So, I mean, usually you get in real tight on these hogs. Did you have to adjust for your yardage, use the wheel at all, or were you able to get in close to where you can just keep it set at that kind of that blind stop at that 20 or so yards?
Yeah, I've got it set to be dead on at 17 right now, and I don't have my wheel set up because for these hogs, I know I'll never shoot past 20 yards. They're just nowhere available to even shoot that far. The area that I'm hunting is so thick, so I just got a kind of quick setup so I can use it to kill some hogs, and when it starts to cool off just a little bit where I can get out in the driveway and do a lot more shooting, that's when I'll get the wheel set up and get my yardage and everything set.
Yeah, because it is nice having all the different tapes with it, but it really is important to do your 20 and 60 yard shooting and make sure that it's super dialed in so you're not peeling off a tape, putting a different tape on, or like I've got several different wheels even with different tapes on it because I'm like, well, if I get close, I know it's going to be one of these three and I'll just keep that wheel on and I'll peel the other tapes off and use those for a different arrow setup or something like that, so... Awesome.
Yeah, that's one thing that I noticed, and I'm really happy about is having that extra wheel because I'll have a wheel set up just for turkey season because that is a totally different arrow set up for me, and that'll be really nice to just switch wheels out and not miss a beat there.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I would encourage having spares. I like to keep the setup wheel. Now, this is my second kingpin, so I've got another wheel already set up with the setup tape. I might take one or the other and peel the setup tape off and use it for an additional yardage tape. But definitely very convenient to have to just be able to pull one off, pull the other, you know, put it on. And it's like set it up. What I will do is because I'll shoot indoors with it a lot too. And sometimes I may shoot indoor 3D or paper targets that aren't just stationary five spot at 20 yards. And at that point, it doesn't matter what tape I have. I just roll it down till wherever I'm hitting the center of the target face. But to have it set to where when I switch over to my other arrow setup, whether it's lighter or heavier, doesn't really matter. I will always figure out where is that hitting. So I'll shoot that other arrow with my current sight tape and say, okay, I know that this is, you know, whatever X yardage. So when I put that new dial on it at the same point, I can just slide it right on and say, this is sighted in for, you know, this is hitting at 35 yards when I've got my current tape at 20. So it just makes it really easy to get dialed in very, very quickly with those new sight tapes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really worth mentioning too, the quality of the sight is evident from the minute you pull it out of the box. I mean, there is no doubt that the HHA sight is absolutely top-notch quality. I was super, super impressed with that.
Yeah, I think I was most impressed from the original version that I had, the amount of weight that they're able to take off. Because, I mean, the first one, indestructible. I feel like the new Tetra Max, also indestructible. But where they were able to find weight savings without giving up rigidity and things like that. I mean, it's just going to be a beast of a sight. I don't have any concerns with being able to slide this in with my, you know, my quiver mounted on the bow and everything and be able to have it where I need it and have no fear about, you know, whatever little bumps it might get along the way as I'm heading to and from the woods or getting up in the tree stand.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're saying.
So you guys are heading out. I know you're planning on getting some corn out. Are you going to try to take advantage of any targets of opportunity? Do you have the bow?
Oh, yeah. I didn't answer that question. Did I ask me if I had my bow? And here's the real answer. I've learned from experience when I'm on these properties, absolutely must have the bow with me because it was just last summer. Andrew and I was filling a feeder up. And we had a hog just come walking right into the feeder like we weren't even standing there. The four-wheeler was running 50 yards away, and neither one of us had a bow, so we're both literally just staring at this hog. And Andrew pulled his phone out and videoed it. It was quite comical, but, I mean, Andrew, if one of us would have had a pistol, we could have killed him. He was only about 12 yards from Andrew. It was quite the ordeal, and I've had other instances too, where I pulled up. There was one time me and Chris Riddell pulled up to a feeder just to pull the card out. And as I pulled the card out, I looked up, and here comes a bunch of hogs. There was about 12 hogs came into the feeder while the four-wheeler was running 5 yards from the feeder. It was something that I would have never have guessed would happen, but it did. And again, no bow with us because we were just pulling cards that day.
Oh, they won't be here. We're making way too much noise. It's this or that.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just like deer hunting at times. If I'm out, I mean, couldn't tell you the amount of times that we've been doing something, especially during firearm season, whether I'd be hanging out around my dad who just, you know, shot a deer and we're field dressing that, or I'm field dressing one and have somebody hanging around, or we're getting a four wheeler in to drag one out and something comes walking in. It never fails that as smart as these animals can be and as easy as they can fool us, sometimes you get these situations where they just seem like they don't have a care in the world. And it's like, well, damn, what am I supposed to do now?
Yeah. And hogs are different than deer too, because you kind of mentioned it just a little bit ago. The reality is wanting to get as many of those hogs killed as we can. And, you know, someone might say, well, if a deer happens to walk by while I'm whatever on the front porch of the cabin, that's not the experience I'm looking for. But when it comes to hog hunting, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, if I could kill one, I need to get it killed for the landowner's sake and just for the environment's sake too.
Right. It's not like you're one of those people. I mean, I've seen it a lot in circles that I've been around, especially coyote hunting or something like that, or even coon hunting. Who cares? Just hit it. It'll run off and die. I mean, it's not like you're trying to do that, but it's not always just about the quality experience of the stalk or whatever it is. There's a purpose outside of the sport of it, or even the food of it, that you're out there for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I end up standing next to the four-wheeler, even on the four-wheeler, and I shoot one and kill one, I mean, so be it, because it needs to be done. But of course, I would never do that with a deer, or even have the interest or desire.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, we've talked several times about not the hunting experience that we're looking for and passing on animals, because it's like, yeah, that's not really what I'm looking for. It's, you know, if I'm looking for food and the food is there, absolutely, I'll do whatever I need to do. But there's a lot of differences to that. So you guys heading down, do you plan on sitting in the blind at all this evening, or is it really just target of opportunity while we're filling the feeders and let's see if we can get some blackberries picked while we're out and about?
It's going to be more about how much time we have. Getting that feeder filled is first order of business. And then if there's blackberries, we're going to pick at least enough for what we want to have for a first batch of blackberries. And if we happen to have time to get into a blind, we will. And if we don't, that's okay too. I'll be back down later this week to actually get some hunting in. But we're not sure what to think on the blackberries. I don't know if you've heard from anyone, but when we were down here 2 weeks ago, they were about 95% all just red with just a few black ones. So I'm not sure where they're going to be.
Yeah, I mean, they're moving pretty quick this time of year. I can't really talk to the wild ones. We'll find out this weekend. We're taking the family back up to the farm this weekend to spend some time, and we've got several patches out there. But I know, like, my thornless blackberries at home, they're pretty much done. We picked a pretty good-sized bucket off of them this year, which I was impressed. It's only the second year they've been in the ground here at the house. But they, once they hit red, they were red for, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks. And then it was pretty much nightly that we were going out and making sure that we were picking whatever was available. It was pretty surprising how quickly they were turning. So hopefully y'all can get into them and stay out of the thorns in them as much as you're getting into the blackberries.
Yeah. Yeah. These definitely are not thornless, I can tell you that.
It just makes it that much sweeter when you fight your way through it and you've got a good bowl of ripe blackberries. So
I don't know, man. Sometimes when we're done, I start thinking about how cheap they can be bought at the store compared to what we just battled through. But,
right.
But it is worth it. It's worth it.
Yeah, and it's nice. So I can't complain up at the farm. We've got the ability. We've tried to set up some of these patches where we've mowed into them with the brush hog on the back of the tractor and given ourselves some lanes that we can get in and out of them. So it's not like we have to crawl through the entire blackberry patch or the bramble to get through all the thorns to try to find them. So it's kind of nice when you can have that set up. It makes it a little bit more easier to deal with when you're trying to go out in the middle of summer when you don't have long sleeves on and deal with all the thorns and picking the small blackberries. That's the other thing, that the thornless blackberry berries are much larger than most of the wild ones. But if you can get the easy, I mean, it's worth it. If you can get pick the easy ones and even just the easy ones, it's always worth it to have a nice fresh bowl.
Oh yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to probably need to wrap this up because I'm just about to run out of signal. So, I don't know if you had anything else to throw out before we hit our parting shots, but my parting shot is more hog pitchers to come.
Absolutely. Hopefully, I'm seeing some text to me later tonight, because I know when you say you're running out of signal, there are some spots where there is no signal. So we will let you go. Good luck tonight. Hope you get everything taken care of, everything works out well, and maybe even get a shot or two at some hogs tonight.
Yep, I'm hoping so.
Awesome, Robin. Well, I appreciate your time. Again, good luck, and we'll be sure to share any pictures that come from tonight or from later hunts this week on our social media platforms.
Right on.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. All right, so it's always good being able to catch up with Robin. He's heading down to literally, I'd call it the middle of nowhere, where he is running out of signal. Just would wrap up this week. I think my parting shot as we are wrapping up this particular episode is just wanted to mention what I feel is really some great news and some big news for outdoors people right now. And a lot of it revolves around, and all of my parting shot revolves around, something called the Great American Outdoors Act. This act is really two parts. It got some bipartisan support. I was actually kind of surprised, and I'll cover that in my parting shot here as well. As much as I'm trying to stay out of politics and the opinions of it, there was some very interesting partisan politics that I felt took place. But the Great American Outdoors Act fully funds the Land and Water Conservation Fund. You've probably heard a lot. I know there are several other great outdoor podcasts that have talked about the LWCF. You may even be aware of some LWCF properties or properties that were created or purchased with money from the Land and Water Conservation Fund. It's funds and grants that are available at the federal, state, and local government levels to help acquire new properties, to acquire bodies of water or access to those properties or those bodies of water, especially out west. For those of you who live out west, you hear a lot about the checkerboarding of private and public property, and there are some. I know how it happens. We're not going to get into it in this parting shot, but with very limited access, really the only way you can access some of these properties is by air. And that's not only what the LWCF is for, but it's for those easements, for those right-of-ways to be able to enjoy public places, city and state parks, even the cement boat launch at the local community lake that my son Jack and I go to and kayak on. That was purchased through LWCF funds. So being able to have this act that fully funds the LWCF at its cap of $900 million per year is going to be amazing. And these funds, a lot of times it's let's raise taxes, let's do this, let's do that. The funds for the LWCF come through fees and royalties that are paid to the government through offshore drilling and also taxes on boat fuel. So if you're ever out on the water and you're like, damn, these prices are crazy, we'd be better off trailering the boat back into town and getting gas at the gas station. A lot of that comes from the additional taxes, excise taxes on the boat fuel itself as well. In the program's history, this LWCF was created in 1965. There have only been 2 years where it was fully funded. I believe it's two times in its history. So it's pretty amazing that not only do we have this, we now have where they need to fund this money. A lot of times the funds were pulled and used for other projects, used in other areas. There wasn't a requirement to fund that. So $900 million a year for federal, state, and local governments to have access to funds and grants to build more city parks, more green spaces, improve the outdoors, even if it's not getting out in the woods, something that we as hunters might often think that this is the outdoors, these are the green spaces. It's awesome even in the cities to be able to create those. We say all the time, usually wrap up our podcast with something around, you know, get outside, enjoy the outdoors, whatever the case may be. So it's really awesome that that was part of the GAOA, or the Great American Outdoors Act. The other thing that this act did was it created the National Parks and Public Lands Legacy Restoration Fund, and that's funded annually at $1.9 billion that Congress agreed on to help address really a backlog of maintenance issues on federal properties, national park systems, things like roads, trails, campsites, boat launches, things of that nature, other similar items on these federal lands. So that's really going to be cool. And I know in reading through some of the legalese, I'm definitely not a lawmaker or able to decipher everything, but it looks like they will submit projects that they would like to be done, things that they would like to use the $1.9 billion for, and it should be allocated that way. There's some other language in there that maybe gives some politicians some ways to pull funds for other things, but hopefully this is all going to be focused around improving federal lands, keeping up the maintenance, making sure that the lands are usable, that it's not just this chunk of property, but we can actually keep it in nice, usable, functioning terms with the additional income. And again, that is coming from different fees that will come from people in the energy sector that are doing drilling, mining, things of that nature. That's where those funds, that $1.9 billion annually, are going to come from. So I'm really excited to see what that does for us as outdoorsmen, as outdoors women, people who enjoy being out in the outdoors. I think what was really interesting for me, and I would love to maybe hear some thoughts and opinions on why this was. Maybe there's something that was missing, but talked about it had bipartisan support, which is surprising enough right now. But when looking at partisan politics, what I was interested in seeing how it played out and really was probably surprised by is that Republicans accounted for all 25 of the nay votes as this bill and this act was going through Senate. It's currently sitting on, figuratively speaking, President Trump's desk waiting to be signed. He said he shows support for it and everybody expects him to sign it. But 25 Senate Republicans and then 104 of the 107 nay votes in the House of Representatives also came from Republican politicians. So again, I don't know why that is. I thought it was quite shocking to me to see that. It would be interesting to hear more about why there happened to be maybe or tended to be more dissent among the Republicans than the Democrats on something that was so outdoors focused. So if you've got any thoughts on that, if you might have a little deeper dive into it, I'm certainly not pointing fingers or trying to share a political opinion. Would just be interested in finding out why that may be. If you have any details on it, shoot us an email at podcast@hotshotmanufacturing.com. Let us know what you think the cause of that may be or why that may be when we have this great thing for outdoors people who seem to, you know, tend a little bit, in my experience at least, to the Republican side. So that would be my parting shot. If you want more information, go out and search the Great American Outdoors Act. You can find all sorts of information. You can find the bill itself out there online. You can read through it. Take a look at what that does. I think it's going to do great things. I'm excited to see what we're able to do with access to more of these funds for what they should be or were intentionally or originally designed for. So I'll wrap up with just saying thank you all once again for tuning in. If you haven't subscribed yet, what are you waiting for? Go click that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app. Know that you can always find the podcast on our website as well, along with our entire lineup of releases, peep sites, and other accessories at hotshotmfg.com. And until next time, we hope you all are able to get outside, enjoy the outdoors, and keep on keeping on. Thank you all for your time. Have a great rest of your week.